Okay, welcome to the Crafting a Spiritual Act panel. My name is Lois, also known as So Magical. I am the moderator for this. I have been doing crafting since a very small child. For several years, I ran a sewing-related website. I also am a frequent contributor now to a machine embroidery e-newsletter. On the other side of things, I've also been reading cards and using other methods of divination for almost as long as I've been doing crafting. And that's why I'm here. Your turn, Kendall.
My name's Kendall. Let's see. I've been doing various arts and crafts for most of my life. Drawing, singing. Then I was silly and got into the SEA, so I started doing chainmail and heraldry and stuff. So I learned a great deal of things in the SEA, mostly how to spend money I don't have.
Been there, couldn't afford the t-shirt.
Yeah, pretty much. I've been pagan since elementary school, pretty much. I didn't know it was actually a religion until I was a senior in high school, and one of my mom's friends went, "Oh, you're pagan, huh?" And since then, I've studied with a whole bunch of groups in the Southeast, and now I'm up here in the Northeast.
Okay.
And I'm Starwolf. Aside from the things I've already described, which is witch, shaman, rune master, and all, I'm also somewhat active in the maker movement. As you can guess by the goggles, the steampunk movement. I'm also, best way to describe what I am is a warsmith. I make enchanted things. Things that incorporate magic into their structure. For those of you who've taken my weird science classes, you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. Crafting as spiritual act. Starwolf, is the process itself spiritual? Is what you make spiritual? Where do you stand?
It's going to depend on the intention behind once I start. There's always a certain amount of spirit in anything I make because I'm putting a certain amount of myself into it. But there are certain things that I just make to make them. You know, if I've got to jury-rig something, or if I've got to just slap a couple of pieces of wood together to brace something, there's considerably less magic in it than there is in, say, oh, the 5+ feet of magically reinforced ash wood that you people see me walking around with.
Yeah. Kendall?
I agree with him. It depends on what you're doing. Pretty much every time you see me, I'm going to have something in my hands. Because between making the chainmail and the jewelry, and I'm learning how to spin, especially now my fiber arts, because I'm doing everything from taking it from the animal to making it finished products. That is a lot more intense than, okay, I need to put together a few stitch markers.
Okay, for me, it's both the act and the output. If I can spend literally hours sitting at the table doing beadwork and creating or sewing a garment, but what I make seems to have an effect on people as well. Even when it's not consciously done, people seem to pick up on what I put into it. Comments? Anyone?
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. Having seen some of your work, it makes absolute sense that there's always a certain amount of magic in what you create.
Well, thank you. I take that as a compliment.
And a certain amount of your dog at times, too.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, we have two dogs. One is a husky, Siberian husky, and the other one is a 9-pound fox terrier toy poodle mix. We call her a fox toodle.
I have a German shepherd, as you can probably see when my partner is wearing his jacket. She loves us a great deal. And her hair is on everything. Mine.
In the case of our house, given that both my wife and I have long hair, our hair is in everything. So there's a little bit of us in anything, whether it's Kathy's embroidery, my chain mail, anything I'm mixing up involving epoxy.
Oh, yeah.
So there's always a little bit of myself in everything I make because it just, well, I shed. It's that time of year. It's shedding season. I'm growing my winter coat.
Now, sharing a house with two cats, I understand completely.
Now, that's an interesting question. Does the presence of the animal fur, hair, whatever animal it is, add or subtract from the process?
For me, it adds because she's pretty much my familiar. I saved her life, she saved mine.
We don't have any actual non-polyfilled animals in the house, so I'm neutral on that subject.
Okay.
Allergies and things. And lifestyle, to be fair.
I can understand that, too. I can understand that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Everybody prepared for a bang. There's a crane across the way. It's lifting three rather large timbers that I think are going to hit the ground in about 2 minutes.
Okay. Now, does anyone else here do
four large
crafting?
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
What?
What do I do? I do so many different things. I started out like 25 years ago tie-dyeing in the 80s and selling that and added beadwork to it. And then from there, I started doing incense, and then everything took on a very witchy kind of flavor through the 90s, and I made some money, and now I'm just, you know, scraping by with it, but I don't have the energy to put into it that I used to. I didn't really do anything with magical intent. I just kind of made it for the people to.
But you brought up an interesting phrase there, magical intent, and that's got a lot to do with what you're making, the outcome. If your intent is to create something magical, it will be magical. If it's not, then it might not be.
Right. Well, whenever anybody would buy it from me, I would say, you know, it's up to you to put what you want into it. And, you know, they'd ask if it's charged, if they were knowledgeable about that sort of thing, and I just said, not purposely,
by me. It'll also be interesting to see the outcome once I get access to a 3D printer. For those of you who don't understand, 3D printer is this device that you can use to make three-dimensional objects out of plastic. You load raw plastic into it, program it on a computer, and it lays out line after line after line after line. I've got a friend who's currently assembling his, and I'm going to get a certain amount of access to it.
Oh, that could be interesting.
I'm thinking of more, not so much as using it to create a finished object, but using it, as it were, to create the base and then go from there.
Yeah, frame.
Frame, or actually lay out the object and then work on enchanting it from beyond.
That leads to an interesting question, though, is when you start moving away from the hands-on creation to computerized or, you know, created or semi-created mechanically or electronically or however, is there a detachment in what gets put into the creation?
I would say on that one, if you do your own programming, no. If you buy a canned program, probably.
I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, because you have the aprons and all, yeah.
I have a computerized embroidery machine.
Okay.
And aside from the fact that you wind up babysitting the machine to make sure you don't have thread breaks.
Or head overheats with a 3D printer.
Yeah. There is still effort involved even in something like selecting the design, the fabric, the thread colors.
Okay.
So, it's human creativity.
Yeah.
It's a tool. It's a more elaborate tool, a more expensive tool, but there is still a fair amount of creativity involved. So to say that mechanical things distance you, that's not always true. That's not always true.
Okay.
The one instance I could see that using something like that or having a computer or something make something removes the human element is like at the World's Fair when I was a kid. There were robots there that would paint. They were programmed to paint. Like they do kanji if you signed up for kanji, or they do all that, but there was really no human input except, I want this. It wasn't, I think this would be great, here's how we do it. That, no.
So basically you need a level of the Heisenberg effect. You need the observer there involved in the process.
Yeah.
Ooh, gee, we're getting into quantum mechanics for...
Anyone else do crafting?
Well, I knit, although it's been a while since I've got a project that I just need the yarn for, that I got it all worked out. It's something that I've done before, but it's just, getting the materials.
We'll talk later. I've got yarn.
Yeah, no, I'm looking for a specific shade of beige. That's the problem. That'll complete what I want.
Okay.
But so it's one of those cases where a year ago I saw just what I wanted and I didn't have the money for it, and this time when I went back to try and find it, I could find the equivalent red, the equivalent green, but I couldn't find the equivalent beige, and it was driving me up a tree, so I was like, okay. These things happen. But the thing that I used to do a long time ago, which I keep saying to myself I'm going to get back into, mainly because I still have a supplies left from when I did. It was years and years ago I was doing, essentially Christmas decorations, although they could have been for anything, but embroidered with beads, bead embroidery on felt.
Mm-hmm.
Your creating things together. I got
yes.
the idea from seeing some of the kits that they used to have finished examples on display when they were selling the kits in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So the people had a chance to do these things by Christmas time. I'm looking at these things, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started buying felt, and I started buying beads and sequins and thread and all this. And I had some cones from, I had saved up. I figured they got to be good for something. Back when I was a kid and worked on tobacco, I used to save up the twine cones,
mm-hmm.
They became the first ones that I did, or became bodies for wise men.
Mm-hmm.
I had all, beaded things there. I had done the faces, I cut all the features out of the finger, and I still have them. I started making a set of angels and never finished. I had done banners with these things, with these the letters and like all these the decorations done with the beads and the sequins, to make the little decorations like a cluster of holly and a candle and so on and so forth, one per letter on this big Merry Christmas banner, that kind of stuff. And I'm going, I still have a lot of that stuff left over, and every time I go into bead sections of stores, I go, ooh. And it's like, there's something in me that this many years later, I want to get back into it.
Me, Lucy, like
so why don't you?
Card.
Yeah, well,
why don't you?
Why don't I? Probably just out of sheer inertia.
Yeah.
I need the tack in my chair. Maybe expressing all this is going to be the tack in my chair, one can hope.
I used to, when I was working in an office, and the rare times I actually had an hour lunch period, I would eat the first half hour, and then the second half hour I would sit there and do crafts. It was integrating what I find now I need to do. with the available time that I had. You know, or, again, at the risk of showing my age, when I was going to college in New York, I used to have to take the subway. So I would sit there with a 4x12-inch macrame board with pins, and I would sit there on the New York City subway doing macrame.
What line?
D train.
That's a relatively stable line.
Yeah.
Never try to do it on the A train. Those old tracks are bang, bang, bang to one side to the other.
No, you really want to talk Rocky, go with the IRT.
Or the old Boston Red Line.
Okay.
I used to knit afghans on the bus, on the train to work when I used to commute. It's been that long since I made an afghan. That's why I'm really looking forward to this new one.
And there's actually a great many projects that are now made for waiting in the office, waiting on the train. There's a project on Ravelry called the Beekeeper's Quilt. And it's made out of little hexagon. You can either make them flat or you can make them puffy. And you just do each one as a completed project, and then you add them together and build a blanket or a chair pad or whatever you want to build it with.
It's like
I've been a gamer for too many
years.
I hear hexagons that I automatically think.
Somebody made one of those too.
They
made
a map.
Yeah, somebody made one of those for one of their friends who got married, and it was a giant queen size hexagon quilt. White with black borders. And she knitted each hexagon and put them together, and it's this huge queen size quilt that lays over the people's bed.
Does it have letters up one side and numbers up along the top?
She didn't go that far. But she knew they were gamers. Everybody knew what hexagon maps were. So she made them one for their bedroom. And she made a matching one for their kid when it arrived.
Wow. So that's cool.
That brings up another interesting point. Where do we find inspiration for crafting as spiritual act? Whether it be the process or the output. Where do we find the inspiration for it?
For me, it's everywhere. Back when I was working, I worked for 15 years as a residential assistant, house assistant, enclave supervisor for adults with special needs. I had clients who had fall down seizures. I had clients that functioned as 5-year-olds and they were in their 60s. And some days I'd take them to class and we'd sit there and they would learn math. They're 50, 60 years old, and this is the first chance I've had to learn math. And we would come up with ways for them to go, okay, what's this plus this? And we'd do the little circles and pennies and teaching them about money. And a couple times I just came up with making stuff for them so they could keep it in their wallets and go, okay, when they had a time, they'd sit down and work on it.
Anyone else?
For me, it can be fiction, it can be sheer inspiration, and sometimes it's coming up to the basement and handing Kathy something and saying, what have I just made? What does it do now that I've made it? That's the scary times.
Yeah, it's like I have to make this. I have no idea what it's for, but I have to make this.
Yep. And sometimes I make it, and it sits on a shelf down in the basement for a year, and then somebody comes along and, oh, I made this for you. I didn't know you 6 months ago, but this is made for you.
Anyone out there have similar experiences?
One of the things when I make crafts, it's usually for somebody, like a gift idea or something. It's like, I want this, but I can't find it, so I make it.
Yeah.
One of them, it's an interesting one, is I did it basically on a dare of sorts. And basically, I was supposed to remind somebody that was going down to Disney World to pick up somebody I know, a little doll Gadget, because Gadget was popular at the time, and he wanted one for his collection. And I said, well, if they forget to remember, I'll make you one. Because I was working with soft sculpture at the time, so I had some fair concept of how to do the Gadget doll. And of course they forgot, and so I said, okay, fine, I'm going to make the biggest one he had. And I took my 4-foot friend, took her dimensions, started assembling the doll. Unfortunately, I started by putting her legs where her arms should be. Ooh. And then I had to fill out the rest perspective, so I now have a 6-foot Kesha doll.
Ooh, like
which works very well in HOV lanes, apparently. But what I found even most interesting of this is because it was a dear friend of mine at the time that I put a lot of love and effort into this doll, that apparently something else went into the doll too, because the cat, that is where my friend was living at the time, thought it was a real person and would interact with this doll like a real person. Come brushing up, meowing, sit in the lap, purr, and if the cat was in a bad mood, it would swipe at its ankles, even though it didn't move at all. But
so,
I mean, the cat was actually interacting with it as if it was one of the
people. You created a soft sculpture golem?
Yeah, I
apparently. Which would also explain why it works in HOV lanes.
That's wonderful. I love it.
I accidentally made the cat a girlfriend by, I saw those little Waldorf dolls, and they're like, oh, so cute, but like really expensive. That's mm-hmm. my motivator, is that so many things are so expensive, and just watching somebody do something, you know, I want to do it now too, like this. And and Pinterest does not hurt that, you know,
in the least.
Obsession any. But I had made, you know, little Waldorf girl, and she was cute. Cat loved her. I came back from vacation. She had holes, and she was, her hair was.
She was well loved.
She was.
And you weren't there to tell the cat no, so.
Right, and the other person there didn't even think about telling the cat no, because cat's the boss.
Yeah.
I've had a similar experience back again when I was doing macrame. I took an Ankh pendant and mounted it on a macrame necklace, and my husband took it and put it around the neck of this huge stuffed collie that we had, and that collie just never felt quite empty after that.
Life symbol, energy, yeah.
Hey, Kali Ushabti.
Oh.
Ushabti, the little figures that they put in Egyptian tombs
for servants when they did
servants and companions and
goers
and doers for the dead.
I had not heard that term.
Yeah.
I work with Ushabtis a lot when I'm making things for people. Admittedly, mine are made out of Fimo clay, but, you know, I don't
Whatever
have access
works.
To a kiln.
Whatever works.
Yeah. And Fimo is a marvelous material if you combine it with the right other elements.
Such as?
Okay, well, you could put herbs in it, which can make baking it interesting. But I use a substance that I get from a high-tech company called Advanced Tachyon Technologies. They call it tachyonized silica dust. They also refer to it as fairy dust. It's an energy conduit, and it's designed to be mixed into paint, but I find you can work it into glue, you can mix it into Fimo if you get the Fimo soft enough, and it basically changes the material into an energy lens.
Does anyone not know what Fimo is?
Sculpti, Fimo, those are brand names. It's the polymer clay that bakes in the oven.
Yeah.
Sometimes overbakes in the oven, but that was back when I was 10.
Yeah.
I understand. I just
it gets
heard that
bubbly
thing.
When
it's
you
Sculpti,
heat it too
heard.
Long and turns,
Sculpti, heard
and turns purple.
Clay, heard, yeah.
Regardless of what color it started out.
Yeah. When it turns purple and bubbly, you've baked it too long.
It's important.
The purple's good, the bubbly's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the tachyonized silica dust, not to get too technical, it basically focuses primeval energies, primordial energies, ki, reiki, prana, mana, name it what you want. It focuses it. The paint that is on Schmitter here has the silica dust worked into the paint, also into the epoxies that I used. So not only is there a certain amount of enchantment, there's a certain amount of high-tech magic.
I only do it because it's pretty. Yeah.
But there's a quote, something about there's no difference between high magic and high-tech.
Any sufficiently advanced magic is indistinguishable from high technology?
Yep.
To turn Heinlein or Asimov on his ear?
Yeah. And honestly, if you look at it...
If you've ever read Crowley, and if you've ever tried to read Heisenberg, they sound the same.
Think about the cargo cults.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's ever seen an airplane. All of a sudden, an airplane lands in the middle of the thing. Okay, you must be a god.
And it kind of keeps working because people keep coming back to study them and they keep bringing them stuff.
Mm.
Not as much as happened in the Second World War, but they're still bringing them cans of spam.
Yeah. Of course, I'm not sure the Afghanis would be real happy because bombs are little yellow bombs and the food packages are little yellow packages. Bad combo.
That's a matter of intent.
Yeah.
That, and back in the early days of MREs when they shipped them to an Ethiopian famine, not understanding that both the Ethiopia is a mixture of Muslim and Ethiopian Christian, which keeps basically kosher, and most of the early MREs were either ham and turkey loaf or a pork-based sausage.
Yeah.
Oops.
That could be a problem.
Yeah.
Just a tad.
Cultural.
Check the culture first.
Inclinations.
Which is why MREs
are
listed as meals rejected by Ethiopians. It's not because of their taste, it's because we can't eat this. It's trafe.
All right. What other aspects of crafting and Too much blood in the caffeine stream. What other aspects of crafting can be considered spiritual?
I would definitely say if you do anything, any smith work, smiths have always been considered priests and magicians. Priests in Egypt, magicians in Europe.
Bards.
Yep. If you're crafting a song, that's definitely a magical act.
If you're performing a song, it's a magical act.
I'm married to one.
Unfortunately, so is my partner. Because sometimes it jumps up and bites you in the
ass.
But I think any aspect of crafting, from creating a song to drawing to anything.
Okay, so you're including performance arts.
And for that matter, cooking, which is an aspect you haven't really touched on.
Kitchen witch.
There is a certain analogy between the witch's cauldron and the crock pot.
That's one thing that I find with baking, actually. Mm-hmm. Not so much the other cooking, although I suppose I could, but, you know, this baking, I almost can't bake anything without intent anymore. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're putting time, energy, supplies. Yeah.
You are, but there's also, and I think it's probably because, how many times do you hear people say, the food is the same recipe, but it doesn't taste as good as it does at home because the cook at home has put something into it for the recipients. The recipients being family, friends, whatever. And it's just one of those things that you absorb without thinking that you have absorbed it, because my mother was like that. My mother was a very good cook. She was an excellent pie baker. And I keep saying, well, I haven't gotten up to her, but on the other hand, everybody thinks my pies are great. So. But you know the difference, and it's like, yeah, you just live with, you put yourself, a cook can't help it, especially a baker.
Mm.
You can't help putting some of your, if you bake something from scratch, it just,
I have a bread machine, and I have a couple of recipes that I tend to make for holidays. Like for Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving meal has to include a loaf of my pumpernickel.
Mm.
Okay. Our downstairs neighbor also has a bread machine. I gave her the recipe. She says that mine comes out better than hers does. And we do a joint Thanksgiving dinner, and she's not happy unless it includes a loaf of my pumpernickel bread. She's even on a low-carb diet and insists that this year I still have to include the pumpernickel. Same recipe. I don't know what the difference is. I am not a particularly... that type of domestic arts is not my strong suit. I can follow a recipe. Don't ask me to improvise on the recipe. But now, how do we explain that? Again, all I'm doing is following the recipe.
But you're putting part of you into it.
It doesn't improve on recipes. And, he's a good baker, but he's really a good cook, inventive cook.
Mm-hmm.
And people just lob into his stuff. Wow, this is absolutely delicious. And he's looking, it's just something I threw together, and to the point where it's become a comic catchphrase in our group. But that's the thing, because he just goes into there, and he knows the kind of thing that he wants, and then he starts having fun. And when that, he's having fun, he projects. Whether he intends to or not, he projects, and you know darn well that that is pretty damn energized skillet supper that you're getting.
Mm-hmm. Or for that matter,
there's no question.
His eggs at Penzic in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Eggs, cheese, pepperoni.
Yeah, dragon eggs. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. You should, he's doing, they are not the same. He's doing flavors of pickled eggs now, and he actually won prizes at Durham for it.
Good for him.
Cool. One of these days, I'm going to make it to Penzic, I swear.
We've been to three something consecutive Penzics.
I don't do Penzic. See, my idea of roughing it is not having cable on the TV in the motel room.
I've kind of reached that point myself.
Every year I can figure, why do I keep doing this? Because I'd miss it if I didn't, that's why. After a while, it's like, it's in your blood.
You don't go anymore. That's the fall out of it fast.
Yeah. It would happen, but,
Do you, as a crafter, associate with other crafters, or do you tend to be more of a solitary practitioner?
I'm a member of a makerspace down in Meriden. A makerspace is kind of a communal area to make stuff.
Oh!
And it... A lot of the people there are more computer-based than I am. It's more of a hacker space than a maker space.
Mm-hmm.
So when I move, a small toaster oven and a pair of hot plates and some oddly modified soldering and welding equipment in, they don't really understand until they get to know me.
And then they know they don't understand.
Or when I suggest, if we mix a little of this funny-looking crystalline white powder in with your plastic, it may have a different effect. I'm going to try putting the silica dust in the bulk plastic for the 3D printer. See if it's...
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to hear that. The results.
It's either going to jam up or it's going to work really well. We don't know yet.
Wow.
Either that or it's going to get off the table and go, you want me to do what?
The computer screen's going to have a giant question.
No, it'll just for those of you who read Pratchett, an arm with an hourglass will come out from somewheres.
Ooh.
I am a rocket wizard.
If you'd asked me this question a little over a year ago, I'd say I was definitely a solitary. Mostly due to the fact I was working 40 to 60 hours a week, and that doesn't have much time being social. Now I participate in a knitting group, and I'm on Ravelry and doing something called Nerd Wars, which is just weird all on its own, which is knitting, spinning, crocheting, and weaving, but based on different things from fandom.
Okay.
And you're assigned to teams depending on your fandom, so.
Okay. That's an interesting one. Anyone with any other questions, thoughts, comments, stories to share?
Actually, I've got a thought that I'd definitely like to hear feedback on. It's basically my thought sometimes is we're all children of the creator, and sometimes we exhibit that skill when we create stuff of our own.
Yeah,
definitely.
Mm-hmm. Buried somewhere in this mess of jewelry that I wear is a necklace for Ogun, which is the Yoruba god of smiths and crafting. I kind of got adopted.
No, definitely. It is just the creative act as practiced by people really does mirror creation by deity, however you view deity. At least that's the way I feel.
Mm-hmm. Being, very much into words and meaning, Tolkien expressed that in that his most famous essay on fairy stories, the same thing, that, we create because we are created in the image and likeness of our creator. That's the way he expressed it.
Mm. Okay.
However you do that.
So if we are made by a maker in the likeness of the maker, then we have the same desire to make that the maker has. It's
all right.
It's part of our being. It's part of our programming.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
I think we never reach a point where our creations will start to create.
We're already getting
it. We already have.
Yeah.
We have computers that are designing computers. Mm-hmm. We have programs that are writing other programs.
And building other things in the case
right.
of 3D printers.
Exactly.
Well, 3D printers and most car manufacturers are now using automated.
Yeah.
We have computers that win at Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And chess.
But did their creations have a spark or an essence that some of our creations?
It depends on how you define it, because, I mean, chess is not something you can plan for, especially if they're playing against a human. And the Blue Machine played against the world chess champion and won and played him to a draw. That's pretty amazing, since very few humans can do that.
Also, it'll be interesting to see one of the other groups I flirt with is the transhuman movement.
Yeah.
Where machine and man blend. So when it'll be interesting to see when the line is crossed between organic sentience and inorganic sentience. Now, being a crystal cruncher from a long back, crystals are alive. I may not be able to sense their energies too well, but they're alive. They are little people.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them come out of Brazil really badly traumatized.
Africa.
Too much blasting powder. At least the Arkansas crystals come out relatively gently.
Okay. Now, if you create something with one of those crystals, what happens then? I mean, is...
The selection process for the crystals is almost a process of divination to find not only the right shape, but the... As it were, the right volunteer. A good example is the crystal at the end of Schmitter here. The original one popped out about 2 years ago. And it was just the glue that the person who made the staff originally, because I bought the staff, I did not go out harvest the wood. I bought it from a friend of mine.
Okay.
And after many years, the small amount of epoxy that was holding the crystal in broke down, and the crystal popped off. So I spent most of a night going through my collection of crystals, first finding the ones that fit physically, and then with a pendulum figuring out, okay, I need a volunteer here, and finding the one where the pendulum waggled yes the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that won. And given that I have like 70 pounds of quartz crystals down in the basement.
Ooh.
Northeast Gem and Mineral, unfortunately you're at Penzic when it's happening, is a great place to pick up huge quantities of bulk quartz crystals, especially if you have a tax license. Mm-hmm. It's held at the same site that they hold the Big E, down in the Better Living Center, and they fill it with Gem and Mineral dealers.
Hmm.
And if you have a tax license, you can get into the wholesale section, where, I must admit, I scored a kilo bag of scepter crystals.
Ooh.
About 4 or 5 years ago. Well, I discovered putting them in the pack pocket of my vest, which is rest right on the base chakra, was a bad idea. took two Hershey bars to get me back into my body. Well, I was walking around, I realized I was here, but I was also here. Mm. That's bad when you're walking around in a crowd. So I took them out of the pocket, put them in the trunk of the car, and did my best to get regrounded. Mm. But when you hear somebody like me saying, I just scored a kilo of crystal, I'm not talking methadrine. This stuff will get you higher if you misuse it. So if you're sensitive to crystal energies, I wouldn't go. It's very wearing after a while. Even I can feel the crystals at that place.
I used to be able to, because you used a pendulum to douse it, but you know there was a time when I could, you know, you just handle it. Remember, Jane was we were selling rocks all the time. Mm-hmm. She was selling a lot of tombstones, and she was also selling a lot of rock quartz crystal. Mm-hmm. And you know, you start picking things up, and it's like, whoa, that one's got something to say. You know, mm-hmm. You're not even looking for it, but whoa.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sometimes they suck you in the eye.
Sometimes without even touching it, because I walk around gem and mineral shows with my hands behind my back, because I know otherwise it's going to be, oh, pretty.
If you go to the gem and mineral, you might want to have somebody handcuff you.
I had, you know, I've kind of fallen away from it, but, you know, I know that, you know, given it half a chance, I've got the sensitivity.
Yeah, I can easily drop $200 or $300 at that place, and that's just in the wholesale section, which tells you how much I'm buying.
Yeah, I have a similar reaction. Every 3 or 4 months, there is a bead show near where we live. And unfortunately, it usually hits on whatever the worst weekend of the month is for me financially. You know, like just before the check that I'm expecting comes in. Consistently, this happens. But going to that show can be dangerous.
Yeah, because we leave the credit cards at home.
Yeah.
Because there's...
I wish I had done that at the Thyber Festival.
They have not only beads of various types of glass, but they also have gemstone beads, mm-hmm. And it's... Last time we were there, one of the last times I was there, found this gorgeous teardrop-shaped, faceted goldstone pendant. It's sitting in my box to go along with the 6mm round goldstone beads, and I just have to figure what goes in between them. But yeah, I think that in itself, the selection process
mm-hmm.
is part of the
Oh, yeah. Any old chunk of quartz will not necessarily do.
And they definitely tell you when they're going to jump into something or when they need to jump into somebody else's pocket.
Yes.
Because I and my partner both collect stones. I'm not sure what fills our apartment more, stones or books, but...
terms of sheer mass, the stones will do it, but the books probably have them in terms of numbers.
Probably. Because we have about 8 bookcases and they're all full, and that's not counting what's still in boxes.
Yeah, okay. We're like that ourselves.
I think anybody who has anything to do with the SCA or crafting or in general, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a hobby. The thing is, if you have a lot of hobbies, whether they're, you know, hands-on hobbies or not, if you have a lot of hobbies, you're going to have that many more books to accommodate all the hobbies.
Okay. It seems like most crafters do more than one craft. Does doing that many crafts and having multiple projects at once going on, which seems to be another common trait, Does that interfere with creativity or enhance it?
I find most times one inspires another, and sometimes I have to pick up another crafting skill in order to make a piece or modify a piece. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that leads to another potential for projects. So it's all kind of a synergy, with the exception of anything to do with cloth, which I leave to my wife, because she's way better with it than I am. Mm-hmm. My sewing is serviceable. Hers is beautiful.
Something which is serviceable can be beautiful in its way, too. Don't short yourself.
It achieves what it needs to achieve.
Exactly, and that's about it. It's like my leather crafting. My leather crafting, I will never win awards for it, but it holds together.
That's better than I can do. But yeah, like he was saying, like when I was making chainmail, I'd have to figure out how to do beads and wire wrapping, which means I picked up beads and wire wrapping, which in order to get the finished product I had to get.
I understand that one.
Some projects require more than one, some projects are multi-craft items when you get the whole thing done.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anyone want to start off final thoughts for this session? Okay, let me rephrase that. Star Wolf, you just volunteered.
Okay. Works for me, because I think I've got an idea. I know I find it almost impossible to not make anything I create a spiritual act, because that's the way I'm wired. I would have to work harder to be non-spiritual about it than I would to just go with the energetic flow and let it happen. With one exception, where I'm working, I'm running a big computerized metal saw, and there I'm just following the specs and letting the machine do the work.
Mm-hmm.
There's no actual spiritual act in it. I just do it, I sit there, I watch the dials and make sure it doesn't blow up.
Okay.
For me, basically, whatever the piece decides to be is what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Don't go, oh, I messed it up. No. Unless you are following a pattern for a paying client that says, I have to have this. Or sometimes even if you are. I've had chainmail pieces that start out, oh, I want armor, and they ended up with basically a hand flower with their god symbol in the middle of it, and they went, oh.
Yeah, if you're working to a contract, you better produce what the client has paid you for.
Yeah, but especially if it's somebody you know who's magically active and...
Oh, yeah.
And you try to do the thing, and it goes, uh-uh, not going to do that.
Okay. I agree. I find for my own mental health, such as it is, I need to craft every couple of days at least. If I can do it every day, so much the better. And I think that being able to create and lose myself in the creative process and then have people enjoy what I create, whether it be beadwork or crocheting or writing an article, that reinforces my feelings. It gives me pleasure, and to know that I've given other people pleasure by what I've done, that's kind of neat too. Any final comments or questions from our rather small but very attentive audience? No? All right. Then I think we will call this session closed, and thank you all for coming, and I hope you got something out of this.